I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Everybody, and welcome to Minute 103 of Season 6 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Father David Mowry, the chaplain of the Movies by Minute community, and I'm very happy that he's able to get it in today before he has to go give his sermon. So thank you for taking the time this early morning for this.
Oh, you are so welcome. But it's good to refresh the creative process by looking at a great movie like this.
Mm-hmm. That is true. So Minute 103 begins with George beginning to question his own worth and ends with George once again disparaging what Clarence is saying. Not really believing what Clarence is doing here. So we ended things yesterday with Clarence explaining his situation and basically getting the Tollbooth guy to run out of the room. Just scare the dickens out of him. And he's out of there. You know, cheerio, good mm-hmm. man. So today we continue with this. And, you know, George is a little confused because at the end of yesterday's episode, When Clarence was talking to him, George is at the point where he's starting to question his own sanity. You know, he started talking yesterday about the fact that maybe Martini accidentally or purposefully put something in his drink. You know, it could be either way. We'll leave that, you know, ambiguous, which it could be either way. And then he starts to realize what he's thinking, and he then turns to Clarence and goes, "What did you just say a minute ago? Why do you want to save me?" And then Clarence responds, "Well, that's what I was sent down for. I'm your guardian angel." And George has a great response.
The whole minute is George just trying to wrap his mind around Clarence's story. I think in part because Clarence is just such an odd duck. It's just very anachronistic and saying very straightforward things that are true but sound absolutely bananas in the context of post-war America. But it's also hard for George to wrap his mind around it because, like you said, he's questioning his own worth. Save me, because he doesn't see himself as being worth saving.
That's right.
He is still working through this idea that everyone would be better off if he killed himself.
Right. Because then at least they'd get money from his, from his life insurance. That's mm-hmm. the only way that he can deal with things. He's throughout this entire movie, it continues with that idea, because George throughout the entire movie thinks that he could always do better than what he's doing. And that, you know, since he's disappointed with what he's doing, he automatically assumes that everyone else must also be, disappointed with George and unhappy with what George can give them. You know, so
he's wrestling with failure in a way that he hasn't had to before, because the whole story and part of the growth of George's character is him processing his resentment for having to give up his great big dreams of his youth in order to take care of what his sense of duty calls him to do, to take care of the family business, to make sure that his community is provided for. And he's made all of these sacrifices. He's done the right thing, quote unquote. And now this loss of $8,000 undoes everything that he has sacrificed for, and his resentment comes rearing its ugly head, and it tears apart his home office that has all of his dreams of dream plans of architecture. He lashes out at his kids. He takes it out on Zuzu's teacher, and you get socked in the jaw for that. But it's all out of this fact that I gave all this up for nothing. I gave all this up just to end up a failure. I've wasted my life. Everyone around me would be better off if I was dead.
Yeah, more or less. That's his perspective on the whole thing. After Clarence tells him that he's his guardian angel, so his response is, well, I wouldn't be that surprised. As meaning that you're the type of angel that I should be getting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm deserving of an angel like you. And I mean, Clarence has a strange response to that. He goes, well, it's ridiculous of you to think of killing yourself for money. $8,000. You know, and you would think that since Clarence lived, let's say, 200 and I think he says he's been dead for 290 years or something like that. That so, you know, $8,000 back then would have been even more of a fortune than it was in 1945. You know, forget about the fact of what it's worth today. You know, money has only depreciated over the years. You know, from that perspective.
Or maybe Clarence doesn't quite understand how much a dollar is worth.
Well, again, we talked earlier in the week about the fact that there probably is no currency in heaven. You know, not that it's a communist area.
Exactly. Or even from his own, since in the fiction of the movie, he was living as a clockmaker beforehand. You know, maybe he thinks a dollar is equal to a halfpenny or something. And so, you know, 8,000 halfpennies, like, okay, that's a lot of halfpennies. But in the end, that's not all that much money. I mean, come on. What's the big deal?
Right. That's right. And, you know, because, again, he doesn't really realize what the worth is. Like, why would you give actually, what Clarence is saying here is that a life is worth a lot more than $8,000. That's his point.
Absolutely.
That's what he's saying. You know, do you know the original name of the story that this movie is based on is called?
No.
It's called The Greatest Gift. And I mean, the theme of this movie is that the greatest gift is life. And why would you throw it away? And so what Clarence is basically saying here is, you know, why would you throw it away for $8,000? It doesn't matter how much $8,000 is worth. It's not worth, you know, the greatest gift is worth more than the $8,000. And I mean,
George, it takes the rest of the movie for George to see that.
Right.
He doesn't, whatever value we're talking about, even if, you know, it is not just the money, it is the failure the money represents that's eating at George. And so he's internalized that failure. It's not just that he's done something wrong, but that he is wrong. He's living out of a sense of shame.
Yes. That's right. And then George, after he hears this, it goes, yeah, well, just things like that. How do you know that? You know, he still is grappling with the idea that how does Clarence know all this information? And he goes, yeah, I told you, I'm your guardian angel. I know everything about you. Well, you look around like, you look about like the kind of angel I get. So he goes back again to disparaging the type of angel that he theoretically deserves. I mean, he did say during his prayer, I think it was last week or maybe it was two, no, it was last week, where he basically said, well, I'm not really much of a praying man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he doesn't think very much of his own prayers. You know,
the last time he specifically mentioned praying is on VE Day and VJ Day.
He mentioned that also, correct, yeah. No, but
I mean, it's just the major crises, the major breakthrough moments that prompts George to pray, which, yeah, you got to start somewhere.
That's right. Well, they do say that you know, people are more changed from faith perspectives, you know, when something big happens. You know, it's not the little things, it's the big things. And then
you're pulled up,
you work your way down.
You're made to, Yeah, you're pulled up short. You're made to realize that you do not contain the reason for your own existence. You're brought face to face with your contingency. You are dependent on something bigger than yourself. And it is in that moment of wonder, that moment of awe, that there is a possibility for conversion, a reevaluation of priorities and your own life perspective. Even though George has just been contemplating suicide and has been broken out of it by an act of charity, that's not enough for him to stand in that place of wonder, to look at life as a wonderful thing. He's still looking at it from a transactional point of view, from an egocentric point of view.
Right. Which again is part of the point of this movie, is to show him over the next half hour, you know, why he should look at it differently. You know, that type of thing. And then he continues disparaging Clarence even more, and he goes, you're sort of like a fallen angel, aren't you? What happened to your wings? So that's also, I think, a possible misconception, you know, that you know, if an angel comes down to Earth, you know, do you necessarily see their wings? You know, are they transformed somehow when they're on Earth as opposed to, you know, being in heaven? Again, this is all, it comes to a theological you know, discussion about the whole thing about, you know, what does an angel really look like? Mm-hmm. You know, that type of thing. But George's perception is that if you're an angel, you have to have wings.
So George needs to read the Book of Tobit. Clearly, Raphael was able to hide his angelic nature, and whether he had wings or not, certainly he was able to go without them while journeying with Tobiah and trying to help out the situation down there. I think it's more of a joke that George is making about, you know, like, well, you're kind of a chintzy angel here. You look like the kind of angel I would get, and I would get a fallen angel. I would get one that can't fly, that's been stripped of its wings. That's less a lesser angel somehow. Because again, it's all about George's lack of self-worth.
Correct. Yeah, and again, it's ironic that's the way that George looks at himself. Because nobody else in the town looks at George. Even Potter doesn't look at George that way. Potter's scared of George because he sees how much potential and how much power George wields. And that's why he does all he can to undermine that. You know, if Potter wasn't at all concerned about George, he would have moved on a long time ago, as opposed to constantly fighting with George to break the building and loan.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, we always fall into that trap. We do not see ourselves as clearly as other people see us. And that's why we need one another, in order to maintain that healthy perspective and for us to really appreciate the impact that we've had on others.
Correct. It's true. I mean, it's the mirror view. The idea that you have to, you know, you can see yourself through others.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily, you know, without someone to mirror, or without looking at a mirror, you can't see yourself. You can't really see what it is that you're doing and what you've done. And I think, again, that's another part of the theme of this movie, is to, you know, to find a way to show George the impact that he actually has had, even though he himself doesn't see it. Because for him, everything that he's done is you know, by second nature, or even first nature. I wouldn't even go and say second nature. It's something that he doesn't think about twice. It goes back to the fact that even earlier this week, he jumped into the water, you know, without thinking, you know, an instinct to go save Clarence, even though he saw that the water was raging, and he himself was thinking about jumping in there and ending his own life. You know, but instead, I'm going to dive in there and I'm going to save this crazy old man, you know, who just fell in. Or he doesn't know that he jumped in, even though we got to see that he jumped in, if you pay attention. You know, last week, we did talk about that. And then Clarence responds and goes, well, I haven't got my wings yet. That's why I'm an angel second class. So he once again needs to emphasize that angel second class means I don't have my wings. So, and George has a great response. He goes, I don't know whether I'd like it very much being seen around with an angel without any wings.
Again, this is one of those moments where it's Jimmy Stewart on stage, kind of not so much the character, because this strikes me as a very Jimmy Stewart kind of wry humor line that could come from the lips of any Jimmy Stewart character. But it is very funny. And again, it's this odd good-naturedness to George. He doesn't just blow this guy off immediately. He's able to crack jokes about it and just kind of like, okay, I'll play along here, but you know, I just don't know if I like being seen around town, just kind of trying to have some fun at Clarence's expense.
Correct. Because Clarence takes him seriously. And Clarence goes, well, I've got to earn them, and you'll help me, won't you? And he goes, yeah, sure, sure. and he goes, but how? And he goes, by letting me help you. So that actually reminded me of, you know, the famous quote from Jerry Maguire, help me help you. I mean, that's what more or less is being said here. So Clarence is basically...
Frank Capra was pretty clear about the influence Jerry Maguire had on him when he made It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah. I would suspect that it is the opposite. Is the other way around.
Oh, really? You think so?
I think it's Cameron Crowe. That's what I would think.
That does make more sense.
Yeah. Slightly. You know, it only came out 50 years later. So, come on. You know, but again, maybe Frank Capra had traveled into the future, saw Jerry Maguire, and said, that's what I want for my George and Clarence. They have to have this conversation of help me help you. There you go. So, but we're going to change it around a little bit. We're going to say, just let me help you. So and then he goes, yes, the only one way you can help me. And he goes, you don't have to have 8,000 bucks on you, do you?
Because George wants the mechanical solution to a relational problem. The problem that from George's perspective is the lack of money. The real problem is his own self-perception.
Yes.
And the solution, of course, that is going to serve us best in the long run is the truth of seeing ourselves with humility and with honesty about the impact we have on the lives of others, owning up to those places where we have missed the mark, where we have been selfish, where we have sinned against other people, but also to recognize that there is a goodness that we bring to the lives of other people, and we can't substitute other material things for that. And we so often try to establish our self-worth by the money that we make or the material things we're able to provide or by the activities we do or the hours that we work. And all of those are good in their proper place, but it has to come from that healthy self-knowledge first. And that's the one thing that Clarence wants to give George. And it's the one thing George doesn't want, because he doesn't want to look at himself because he doesn't see himself as worth looking at.
Right. Exactly. That's essentially his biggest issue here right now, with the way that he looks at himself by this. And then Clarence gives a response and says, oh, no, we don't use money in heaven. Oh, yeah, that's right. I keep forgetting. So again, you know, they're reiterating the same thing, you know, that just like we talked about earlier in this week, and in the future in Star Trek, they don't use money. So obviously they don't use it in heaven either. You know, there's a correlation there.
There are so many points that are reiterated in this minute. I almost wonder if this scene needed another pass by the editor, because this minute in particular stuck out to me. It's like, okay, yeah, we know all this stuff, movie, and I know that it's hard for George to track with it, but I got it, I understand it. So there's just kind of this sense of like, okay, we're going to establish the premise, we're going to establish Clarence as an angel, he doesn't have magic powers, he's offering a different solution. But I don't know, to me it just kind of felt like I wanted the movie to get on with it in this scene. It would be a different thing if this was the first scene in the movie, where, and I think there might be a version of It's a Wonderful Life where you start with the bridge house scene, because you're presented with this in media res kind of situation, like what's going on here? What's the understanding? But we already know that Clarence is an angel. That was revealed from the very beginning of the movie. So we as an audience don't need it. And if George is just going to be this resistant to the idea throughout the whole scene, I don't know. From an editing perspective, I think this could have been trimmed down.
I think that it was done on purpose and wasn't edited down more because of the idea that they want to make it seem more believable, everything that Clarence is doing to convince George that he's real. You know, if it would have just been a one line and then later on he just goes, oh, yeah, now I believe you. You want to believe that George needs the convincing. It's not a given fact that George believes Clarence. So they need to stretch that out a little bit. I think that's where that comes from. But you're right. I mean, it does sound repetitive, but I think it's on purpose and is useful in helping the story, move forward when it comes to that, to make it seem more realistic that this is what's really going on here. But again, we also see that George is he's acting very condescending to Clarence by the way that he's talking about it. He's far from being convinced with the way that he's talking now. He's like, yeah, sure, I forgot. That's what you meant. Sure. No problem. And that's how this minute ends. So did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
No, nothing else for this minute.
So every, today's Sunday, so we don't normally have a segment on today. And we got to finish up quickly because Father David's got to get to give his sermon very shortly. So we're going to quickly, we'll jump to Thursday's segment, which is Jimmy Stewart Thursday, where my guest will give their top five Jimmy Stewart performances. So why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up.
You got it. Well, boy, it was tough to pick just five for this top five list because I'm a big Jimmy Stewart fan. I think he does phenomenal work in all the various movies that he's in. But if I must limit it to just five, number five, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. What just a great performance. Again, it's a Capra and Jimmy Stewart collaboration. I think Capra gets a really great performance out of Stewart in this particular film, that kind of fresh-faced innocence meeting the hard reality of politics in Washington and whether it's just enough to believe in the system to overcome the inherent flaws and corruption of the system itself. And just the filibuster scene alone, oh my gosh, what a great piece of acting.
Yeah.
Number four, Harvey. What a charming movie. And again, Jimmy Stewart just brings that sense of authenticity to such a straightforward character like in that movie, and the way that the comedy plays out, and just overall that movie about the imaginary giant rabbit. I mean, if anyone was going to be able to pull that off, it was going to be Jimmy Stewart. Then shifting wildly in tone, number three, Rear Window. The challenge of an actor to be confined to a chair and still sell a character, that's a big ask. And Hitchcock gets a very good performance out of Stewart in this role where he doesn't have the same kind of physicality. He's not able to be up and moving around as much. He has to do a lot more acting with his face, with his dialogue, and with his interactions of other people. The overall performance in Rear Window, I think, really stands out.
Okay.
Number two, The Philadelphia Story. Personally, one of my favorite movies, hands down. Here we have a character played by Jimmy Stewart who is okay being drunk to yell loudly, C.K. Dexter Haven, outside of Cary Grant's guest house. Just the comedy, the acting, the interplay, the romantic tension, the kind of the more madcap aspects of it. I think there's a lot that Jimmy Stewart's asked to do in that film that I think he does very well. And then lastly, number one, it has to be this movie. It has to be It's a Wonderful Life. There's so much that he's asked to do. He's tasked with tracing the development of this character in every major stage of life, from a very young man up to this moment at the bridge, and to play out that believable character portrait. He does such a great job with George Bailey and really brings that inner turmoil, that sense of resentment to bear on everything that George Bailey does, even in those moments where George is seeming to enjoy himself up to this point. There's still that lingering sense of like, yeah, but I gave it all up for this. And was it worth it? Am I worth it? And for him to then go through this rest of the half hour of the movie to wrestle with that, to grapple with it, and arrive at a place where we believe the transformation is a testament to his acting abilities and his characterization skills.
Right. All right. Very good. Thank you very much for that list.
You are welcome.
So why don't you once again tell people where they can find you?
You can find me every so often using the platform formerly known as Twitter. I will tweet there with the handle at Father Mowry. That's FRMOWRY. And you can follow me there. And every so often I tweet things, but it's not as often as it used to be. But I'm trying to figure out where else I might want to go for my social media needs, because it seems like we're at a transition point as we record this particular episode.
Well, there's always transitions in the world. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for a Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, formerly known as X. And you can find me on my website, MovieAroundMinute.com. So why don't you go finish up giving today's sermon, and you want to come back again tomorrow?
I would be delighted to come back tomorrow.
Okay, and it's not an April Fool's joke that I want you to come back tomorrow. So don't take it the wrong way. All right, so until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.